And welcome to the Glacially Musical Podcast. It is beer, metal, and swearing. Of course, I am Nick Cameron of the aforementioned Glacially Musical. I am joined by my good friend, a man with a full body, with full of red liquid, Keefe Chablis. How are we doing today, buddy?
I'd much rather be a Chablis than a Merlot. How Merlot can you go?
Pretty low.
Same.
I'm sorry, I don't drink wine, even though Missouri is very famous for our delicious wines. I find wine to be too room temperature-y or gross.
Apparently, red wine is very good with a steak, but you would never know.
No, I would not. What I find to be very good with a steak is a delicious STL IPA. And this weekend, as I mentioned to you off air, I will, as we're very busy, this weekend is the big annual celebration for lawyer wife and I will be having a delightful ribeye the size of a toilet seat lid, and I cannot wait for that. Anyway, thank you everyone for joining us this week. If this is your first week and you heard about us talking about Slayer Seasons in the Abyss, thank you for joining us. I will tell you more about this record as time goes on. Here's how we do this each week. We have a greeting, a beer check, a vinyl check, shirt check, news check, meat of the day. Meat of the day, red meat, Slayer Seasons in the Abyss. My vinyl check this week, I got a couple. I'm thinking I didn't check this one already. If I did, let me know. The Obsessed. Okay, cool. I did not.
I think it's new to me.
The Obsessed Incarnate. This is a Record Store Day release. Got it at Planet Score Records. Cool. Since we're recording in the daytime, I can get a cool little bit of light on this. I think I got this for about $22. I am not the biggest fan of the Obsessed in the world. However, I mean, who doesn't like some, you know, quality ass doom metal, even if it's made by crazy people, especially if it's made by crazy people. Record two this week, I got off of Discogs for about $5 plus shipping. And that is The Sweet Desolation Boulevard. Longtime Ace Frehley fans may recall on his 2009 record Anomaly, he covered Fox on the Run. So if you look, you know, normal black record, it's a little bit of a beat up copy. It plays okay. It's also got Ballroom Blitz on it, which I did not realize was a The Sweet song. I also did not care because that song kind of sucks.
Oh, all the Wayne's World fans in the world hate you right now.
I love Wayne's World, and Cassandra was wonderful singing it. It was okay when she sang it. Yeah, the visuals may have helped.
I think that the song is best known from Wayne's World in the Western world. I think Crocus did a live version of it that a lot of people seem
Somebody
to know.
Somebody did it.
And then The Sweet. Yeah, The Sweet is cool. You know, Metallica has covered The Sweet, by the way. Not the same band as Sweet. This is The Sweet. So, just wild. Band names are wild.
Wait a minute. No, this is just Sweet.
Okay, Sweet Just.
Yeah, Sweet Just. I apologize. Sorry. It's also got Into the Night, but not the same Into the Night that Ace Frehley covered by Russ Ballard. A different Into the Night, written by an entirely different dude whose first initial is R.
Fair enough. Is that all yours today?
That is all I am doing today.
I have a very cool one for today. This has been lurking behind me in case anybody peeked over my shoulder in the shot. One of my favorite soundtracks of all time, Repo Man. Nobody ever called Pablo Picasso an asshole. If you were of a certain age, this is one of the great B-movies of all time. Fun fact, I used to work for the director, Jonathan Wax, and his wife at one point, doing some marketing. Jonathan went on to do a few other indie films, taught at UCLA and Emerson. Of course, Repo Man, one of the original Emilio Estevez movies. Harry Dean Stanton is in it, rest in peace. And the soundtrack is an exceptional slice of 1980s punk, probably the place where most people discovered suicidal tendencies outside of LA. Institutionalized, had a little bit of a heat after this. So Repo Man, the title track by Iggy Pop, TV Party, Black Flag, not their best song, but definitely their most popular. Institutionalized, Suicidal Coup d'Etat by the Circle Jerks, El Clavo y la Cruz by the Plugs with a Z, Pablo Picasso, again, Burning Sensations. Let's Have a War by Fear, their second most popular song. When the Shit Hits the Fan by Circle Jerks. Hombre Secreto, Secret Agent Man in Spanish, also by The Plugs. Bad Man by Juicy Bananas. Real Teen by The Plugs. And the album and soundtrack was produced by Peter McCarthy and Jonathan Wax, who picked the bands. So, just if you've never seen Repo Man, treat yourself. This came in the Mylar with the paper already. Rare these days. I'm really thrilled. I already have it.
My Obsessed record did, too.
How about that? How about that? This is just a plain old new press of a vinyl. But I like that it came in the paper sleeve.
And I forgot to beer check.
You did, but I guess we're doing shit out of order today. I thought so.
My beer for the week is the Charleville Brewing. Let's see if I can get a good. Oh, I cannot. There we go. The Charleville Brewing Hoptimistic. Oh, it's a little bouncy. Pouring it into my Schlitz goblet glass.
Which got a little Schlitz again, just is one of those beers like Grolsch that just sounds like a body function.
Yeah, but it's delicious.
I totally drank too much coffee today and I Schlitzed my pants.
Yeah, I could see that. They went back to the proper formula back in like 2009 or so.
Phil, if you're going to Grolsch into this, speaking of Wayne's World. Is that Charoville, like Charo Coochie Coochie or Char?
No,
some other spelling.
Charleville.
Oh, how do you spell that?
Charleville.
That is not what I heard.
It is not. It does not roll off the tongue. It doesn't. Uncomfortable. However, the beer is delightful. They are a brewer and vintner. Missouri has an amazing wine scene, and they are in the St. Genevieve Herman area, where there are quite a few wineries. Wineries, not vineries.
Vineyards,
wineries, or vintners.
I think
did I say Vinter's twice?
I think it's Vintner, but maybe it's Vinter. I don't know. I'm not a wine person either. And I live near Napa Valley, not that far, but.
Whatever. Wine, I don't care.
Yeah, my non-beer check, as usual, is another Liquid Death, Murder Your Thirst.
Murder Your Thirst.
Liquid Death came out with three new flavors I still have yet to try, including an orange, so you know I'm all about it. And I'm going to drink this once again from my beloved Glacially Musical poured glass, which you cannot get at fine retailers anywhere.
Although I did find a box of pint glasses that are ready to be made up, but the production team has turned it off, so.
No, the production team went on a strike. We are a union podcast, and so if we are not paying union wages and taking care of them feasibly, no fair bargaining, no worky. Cheers.
Okay. Cheers, my friend. I love me a good double IPA. It's going to be a good night. I got tacos when we're done.
I am also making tacos because I missed it yesterday. All right.
I was going to make tacos yesterday, but I got really excited about quinoa stuffed peppers. So I made quinoa stuffed peppers.
How did that come out? That sounds lovely.
Last night was edible, but after it like congealed overnight, it was way better. It was like chili. You know, chili's better the second day. So the family had poo-pooed it last night. I'm going to try it one more time, but I'm going to try it. I'm going to make the stuffing one night, like on a pizza night, and then bake it the next day in the peppers.
I didn't really, investigate your kitchen too well because it was a chaos time and I was only there for a few days. But how do you guys do with the rare earth grains? Are you a rare earth grains family?
I don't know what that means, so maybe.
Like ancient grains, Frika. The descent, you know, the parents of couscous, buckwheat, things
couscous like that. Couscous sounds like a sex term in the South.
I'm not even going to go with the joke that came right into my brain.
You want a little bit of couscous?
We're going to get stumped. I feel like it's, the girlfriend of Bruce Willis in Pulp Fiction says, instead of, you know, give me oral pleasure, she says, would you make couscous with me? With that voice. That's what I heard in my head.
Come on, Cletus, give me down with that couscous.
Zed's dead, honey, and it's a chopper, not a motorcycle. All right.
Anyway, news check. I have two news checks today. They are both short, so I'll make them fast so we can get into Slayer. Number one, Kiss's Gene Simmons. We discussed the $2,000 The Vault package recently. It is presently selling for $500 on Rhino.com. And last week they announced you can finally buy just the CDs and just the book for $80. It's 11 CDs and a hardbound covered book. $80. Finally, we got there. I still do not want to hear Gene Simmons' Leftovers. Somebody who wrote the songs No, 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 Secretly Cruel, and Burn, Bitch, Burn. If those are what made the records, I don't need to hear what did not. Because that's a dog shit on your shoe.
Why is the best non-Kiss Gene song ever his cover of When You Wish Upon a Star from Disney?
Because quite frankly, Gene was not able to write quality songs by himself post 1975. Dressed to Kill, one of the big three, one of the original three Kiss records, he only wrote two songs on it. The other two songs he brought were Wicked Lester tunes, co-written by Steve Carinell. And in beer, metal, and swearing news, death metal legends Deicide have teamed up with the vaunted brewer from Indiana, Three Floyds, to put out the Light Defeated Stout, which has a 6.66% ABV. If you know, you know. That is a good percentage for a stout, in my humble opinion. And that will be debuted at the Philly Beer and Metal Fest next month. So, I mean, that's just on brand.
Brought to you by friend of the show, not really, Decibel Magazine. Decibel's metal.
Yes, they're friends of the show.
If we say they're friends. Albert, I have interviewed and talked to him casually on the phone in the past for not an interview. We met in person a few times and it's always been cordial.
If I say friend of the show, it's friend of the show.
Honestly, when I got into music journalism, Decibel is who I wanted to work for. Only Decibel or the earlier incarnation of Revolver, probably most likely not now, but like back when in the day, previous ownership, I had really wanted to write for Decibel or Revolver. That was my goal. And I ended up at Ghost Cult.
Just quick bit of personal news, and I'll let you do your weekly news check. Hopefully I sound better this week, as I finally got an arm for my microphone. So my microphone is now in the proper place, and you won't hear me clickety-clacking when I got a clickety-clack.
Nice. Such a girthy boy, your microphone. My microphone is in the shot this week because I was too low last week. So I apologize if people could not hear me properly. I do find that if I pull the mic into the shot too much and or when I hold up the vinyl, the tracking of the camera kind of loses my face. But that's a benefit. That's a bonus, it's a feature, not a bug.
Well, I would say your microphone is quite attractive. I like the pink and purples. It looks very Brazilian money.
Well, also Canadian money, also.
No. Canadian money is not pink and purple. Your new name is Brazil money. You're B money.
Fair enough. Okay. You
know what? Real quick, I'm jumping in. Omar, do not fucking cut this. I love it. The rare times, because you know I get a lot of pity laughs from Keefe. I mean, legitimately pity laughs. But every now and again, I can break him down, and I just got the real smile and laugh when I called him B-Money. So, nailed it.
Fair enough. Before my news check and then the shirt check before the Slayer of all of it, I did want to say, Omar Cut This is the reason I have this pink mic. He has the same mic. I used it at his house when I was in New York last year, and I was like, oh man, I need one of these. It's, but you know, my podcast mic was fraught with problems, as you well know, even though Fafine is a brand that I love. This is also a Fafine, but he has his is all white, and he was like, we do so much stuff with my chair is black, my shirts are almost always all black, baseball cap, dark bedding, the pink and the light up thing will contrast and pop nicely. I don't know if you noticed, I've also changed my ambient room lighting to blue from green, and I might try a different color every few weeks just to see.
You need more colors, because my set is very colorful.
Yeah.
And you can totally see what the flag looks like today.
Yeah, the flag looks pretty good in this light today. I'm not sure why. Could be the sunlight in the sky.
The sunlight's there. We need to start recording more during the daytime.
F daylight savings time forever. So news check this week. Still no Record Store Day list for me. Hopefully next week. It's just been a strain for me to get there. But hopefully next week. I just need to compile. I have all the materials. I just need to organize it so we can blast through it properly. But here is an interesting news. Former Glacially Musical subject, Slipknot, is getting ready to do their Knot Fest Australia, which they are not playing. No pun intended. Their first show of the year is in about 5 weeks at Sick New World in Las Vegas. I'm may or may not go at this point. Some things are getting in the way of life, and I don't know if I can make it now. We'll still be covering it, hopefully, at Ghost Cult. I just may not be there. But he gave an interesting interview to friend of the show, Monica Strutt, who works for Knotfest, but she's also from the band The Last Martyr. Shout out. She also is a music marketing expert. That's how I know her. She's been on my podcast. I've been on hers.
I've interviewed her.
You've interviewed her, too. She's delightful. Great person. And she teamed up with Knotfest. She's starting to do Knotfest Australia interviews. She used to work at Heavy Australia magazine, the Decibel magazine of Australia, or the Kerrang of Australia, probably better than Kerrang. So she interviewed Clown, who doesn't give a lot of press. He's doing some press now, but he normally doesn't do a lot of press. And a lot of people have been like, the wheels are coming off of Slipknot. Lost three members in the last year. Lawsuit still unsettled. I think they finally settled their lawsuit against Dick Nose Guy Chris Fenn. Lots of problems. Corey Taylor, mental health issues, semi-postponing tours, except one tour of Asia. And he has been kind of like laying very low and very vocal about his mental health and that I don't think I can do Slipknot forever. But also at the same time, Slipknot 25th anniversary of their debut album is this year. And so Clown gave a very wide-ranging interview I highly recommend you check out after you're done listening to this podcast. And like, the headline that you saw go around today is, like, the next possible Slipknot album or EP to come out this year. We know that already, that there was something coming this year. It was actually supposed to come out last year. But also, he did say they are excited about their new drummer they're getting ready to reveal. They teased that drummer on Instagram without teasing their identity, but they just showed a broken drumstick, so they are rehearsing with a drummer. They had floated the idea of not using a drummer and going with drums on tape. Bad idea. And he said some interesting stuff about, like, oh, you know, we're doing everything in the spirit of Paul and Joey, and they're gone, and I miss them. Nothing about people that have been fired from the band, retired from the band. But interestingly, Clown has been saving up 25 years of memorabilia and videotapes and all kinds of films and stuff that he's going to release, and he's suggested that there might be some anniversary re-releases and other special activities in concert with these tours and festivals that Slipknot is going to play. They haven't really announced the U.S. one other than these couple of dates. So it'll be interesting to see if they play the full album in full. He has said in the past he didn't want to. I think they did it once before. And also, he said two other really interesting things I want to bring up here. That Iowa, which is the later record, is heavily tied to the first record. In his mind, it's just an extension of the first record, and they should be celebrated together. And also, he alluded, you know, they're being sued. One of the other things is they're being sued right now by the estate of Joey Jordison that they stole, air quotes I'm making for you podcast listeners, stole some of Joey's things for their Slipknot Museum and profiting off of Joey's life and death. And he alluded to it. He was like, you know, I wouldn't like it if someone stole my stuff. I'm talking about the stuff in the Slipknot Museum is owned by me, our property. He, like, doubled down in a, like, if you're being sued, you're not supposed to talk about material information having to do with your, I think your lawyer wife.
Poor form.
Yeah, poor form to jump on a podcast and talk about the lawsuit that's ongoing and not settled.
No, best case scenario, you just tamper the jury pool doing that. So
a little bit, but also, like, maybe he feels like he felt like he has a really good case that they own it. But anyway, again, I do remember that, again, this has been since 2003. Slipknot Incorporated is their manager. Jonathan Brennan Clown and Corey, and everybody else in Slipknot has been an employee, including, that means the costumes are probably not yours to take home, the gear is not yours except your own stuff that's given, sold, you know, you bought or sold to you. So maybe he didn't own the drum sets, maybe he didn't own the costumes, maybe they're all, maybe the family feels like they should have it, but Clown does. I just thought that was really interesting that he doubled down hardcore and no one is really talking about it.
That would explain why when we saw the audition footage for on some kind of monster, why they were still using the basses Jason Newsted used on stage, because they weren't his. They were the band's.
Accurate as F. I'm very excited. I do believe Eloy Casagrande, formerly of Sepultura, we've talked about it 3-4 weeks in a row. I do believe he's going to be announced as the drummer. I will be surprised if he's not the drummer. And I wish them the best. I love Eloy. He's a wonderful person. I've hung out with him, and he's a phenomenal guy. And I will tell you, we discussed that Jay Weinberg was fired with no warning, just fired on social media by Slipknot. And Clown did say no hard feelings, and there never was. It just was time to move on to a new thing, move on to a new phase of the band without him. No, he didn't shit on him.
HR make the call. Don't do it on so. Don't just tweet at him anyway.
I think if he's been in a band with you for 10 years, you probably owe it to him to call him and be like, we're going in a new direction. Especially if it's not personal, because it's going to feel personal as a petty, vindictive person myself from New York and formerly Boston and now San Francisco. I would be pissed if this has happened to me.
Yeah. Okay. Is that all your news?
That is my news. We have to do a shirt check, my friend.
Shirt check. Funny how. Joe Pesci from Goodfellas. One of my absolute favorite shirts. When I was going through security on my way to Vegas, TSA looked at me and goes, that's the best shirt of the day.
The best shirt ever. I mean, we will do, again, if we somehow get DX Ferris on the podcast, he has also written a book about Slayer. He's written several books about Slayer and a book about Goodfellas.
Look, if he just needs us to pump his tires or something else, I'll pump whatever needs to be pumped.
I will work the shaft and cradle the balls. DX, get on this podcast.
Look, I'll give you the man shocker.
To explain what the man shocker is, go ahead.
Nope. You're just gonna have to want and dream.
Is it two in the pink and one in the stink?
A man doesn't have the pink.
I mean, he does. I live in San Francisco. They all do, buddy.
Okay, well,
you have no idea what's going on here.
Yes, I have been there. I do. Yeah, I do.
So,
my brother-in-law lives like two blocks from you.
My shirt check is my Ms. Moore shirt, bought at St. Vitus Bar. Hopefully, does not go out of business. We have gotten a minor St. Vitus Bar update in the form of a personal page of one of the owners. Said soon news is coming about the future of St. Vitus. I really hope they can reopen. I know you never got to go. I went many times. And I really hope they reopen.
Yeah, I can understand that. And if you don't mind, I am now going to switch over. I'm going to get into the Wayback Machine. I'm Peabody, you're Sherman. So get in the Wayback Machine.
I'm Mr. Peabody, and this is my human, Sherman.
My boy. This is my boy, Sherman.
My boy, Sherman. A little sketchy. Go ahead.
You just ruined Peabody and Sherman, you son of a bitch.
For everybody listening.
Oh, Jesus H. Christ, Monopoco stick. Okay, fine. We're going to get into the DeLorean and go back 34 years, which is
Marty!
Which is now farther back than Marty went in 1985. He only went 31 years. We're going 34. Because we're going to die.
I'm also going to ruin Back to the Future for you.
Don't.
And say that if Leah Thompson was my mom, I would have definitely got in there.
You are. Oh, God. I knew. Why didn't you mute yourself for that one? You mute yourself when you're saying important things, and then you drop that one. And, let me leave the mic on now. May I continue? Oh, Jesus Christ. We are Amtrak. We are off the rails. Anyway, so 1990, we were talking about, when we didn't mention this earlier, we're talking about the fifth record from Slayer. So the fifth record of the big four bands, I think, were seminal records. And you could see the direction of each of those bands as they went forward. except for anthrax, because I don't know crap about anthrax. So the other three, you know, Metallica's fifth album is Metallica. Megadeth's fifth album is Countdown to Extinction. And those albums have a lot more in common with each other than they do, Persistence of Time, which I do know a little bit about that one. Persistence of Time and Seasons in the Abyss. Interestingly enough, Persistence and Seasons both came out in 1992. And Countdown and Black came out in 1991. So there was a 2-year difference between those two albums. Within a 2-year span, all four of the big four released brand new albums. And the Black album and Countdown to Extinction created a term in my brain, the new album, as a derisive kind of looking down on it thing. Slayer, however, does not come out with the new album like Megadeth and Metallica do. But let's talk about 1990 for a second. 1990 was quite a year for heavy metal. I actually looked these things up this time rather than just spouting my, you know, shooting myself and stepping on my own dick. So we have AC/DC dropping The Razor's Edge, the worst record they had ever put out until their next one. Alice in Chains drops Facelift. Anacrusis from Bridgeton, Missouri, which is where I work, drops Reason. Significant, of course, Anthrax, as I mentioned earlier. Kronos, Bathory, Biohazard drops their debut. Black Sabbath drops Tear. We can forget about that one. The Black Crowes drop their debut, Shake Your Moneymaker. Blue Cheer still going strong. John Bon Jovi does Blaze of Glory. Cinderella's Heartbreak Station. Damn Yankees self-titled. Danzig 2, Lucifuge, which is probably the worst of the three classic Danzig records, if I'm being honest. I know I'm right because I'm talking. Keefe's making faces. Bruce Dickinson drops Tattooed Millionaire, which you will never hear me talk about again. And in fact, to get me to talk about that record, I need to be under duress. Deicide, self-titled. Entombed, Left Hand Path. Exodus, Extreme, Ex-Hoarder. A lot of X's going on that week. Flotsam and Jetsam is still going. Gwar, Scumdogs of the Universe, previous podcast subject. Iron Maiden drops a record that they should have dropped on the floor and not released. No Prayer for the Dying. Judas Priest, Painkiller, which is still considered to be an abject classic by many. And that is actually a record that Keefe and I have argued about, because I call it what passes for Iron Maiden, and he says the drummer was on Painkiller, and that means something to him. I don't get it. King Diamond, The Eye, previous podcast subject. Previous podcast subject, King's X, Faith, Hope, Love. Crocus, Creator. Crocus again. Caius, Megadeth drops Rust, as I mentioned earlier. Pantera drops their major label debut, Cowboys from Hell. And I think we should call that the debut, because, you know, independently self-released records don't really count in anybody else's discography. Chris Poland, future Metalopolis. I'm going to go ahead and say this. If Duncan is listening, future podcast subject of the Department of Metal Antiquities, Chris Poland. Praying Mantis with Paul Di'Anno and Dennis Stratton. Oh, probably check that out too. Wow, I'm finding all kinds of stuff for the DMA. Prong. I'm done here.
Death Angel, Sacred Reich, and Queensryche Empire. Don't forget those important three.
Oh, and previous podcast subject on the Department of Metal Antiquities, Soundgarden drops Screaming Life / FOP.
Also, Scumdogs of the Universe, Gwar.
I said that. I did say that one. Living Color drops Time's Up, which I believe is their first record.
Second?
Poison, Flesh and Blood. This is a great year. 1990 is an amazing year for albums. And if you look at this in the hard rock metal genre, we are seeing the Velcro being pulled away. The poppier metal, the glammier metal is, you know, when I say Poison, Flesh and Blood to you, I don't know what you hear, but for me, I hear the last gasp of a really cool band. Because Poison didn't release anything after that worth a damn. And Cinderella, Heartbreak Station, did they release any records after that? John Bon Jovi releases one. There's one more Bon Jovi record that's a major hit, and then they're done. Anyway, so 1990 is a transitional year. It's an interesting year. Nirvana is close to dropping their first album, Bleach, to quote Philip J. Fry, that's the barbecue's over sound.
I think it's out already, actually.
Is it out?
Yeah, Nevermind is like about 91 months away. Yeah, Nevermind. Nevermind and the Black Album are...
Weeks away.
Weeks, like a month, months away. Yeah, 12 months away.
No. Nevermind was 91.
So was the Black Album.
Yeah, and they were weeks apart.
Yeah.
You said 12... Oh, you mean 12 months from now. Oh, yeah. Okay. Miscommunication. Yes. The Black Album and Nevermind were literally weeks apart, and we are about 18 months away from that in the album we're talking about today. So... Slayer is still on Def Jam Records. It is their last album on the Def Jam Records.
It's officially Def American now.
Is it?
Yeah, because Russell took the Jam part with him, basically. And Ruben renamed
You're right, Def American Records.
And then later, American Recordings.
Yep. I'm going to quote, I got to quote Mike D. Got fat rhymes like Russell Simmons steals money. That's what he said. It's in the record. You've heard it. It's on Ill Communication. We all know it. So they're on Def American Recordings, their first album on Def American Recordings. They are continuing to record with producer savant Rick Rubin. Look,
weirdo conspiracy theorist, Bilderbergs, straight up weird symbols on his book. Weirdness.
Yeah, you know what? He's crazy.
He's pretty QAnon.
Boots Riley did not tell us anything we did not know about Rick Rubin. We knew Rick Rubin was an abject nut bar. Okay, I'm going to quote. He is a oogly, 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 ooh, crazy wrestler. Anybody who has read Have a Nice Day, the original Mick Foley autobiography, he describes two, he just wants to play a crazy wrestler. There's two kinds of crazy wrestlers to him. The kind that go, blah, 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 look at me, I'm so crazy. And then there's the guy like he walked in on who was a dorm mate when he was in college playing lacrosse. He was on a lacrosse scholarship, played goalie. He walks in on his roommate sitting on the floor in the middle of the floor watching TV, eating brownies, stark fucking naked. And in his mind, this guy was far crazier and far scarier than 15 of the oogly oogly ooh dudes. Because this guy wasn't being crazy to impress anybody. He wasn't being crazy to be weird. He was being crazy because that was his comfort zone. His comfort zone. He felt best being naked on the floor eating brownies. Rick Rubin is not that guy. He is not a naked brownie eater. He wants you to think he is. No, Rick Rubin is Joaquin Phoenix.
I think Rick Rubin is busy playing the part of Rick Rubin in life.
Right. He's Joaquin Phoenix. Joaquin Phoenix is not crazy.
Again, I don't think you've... Have you watched Succession? I don't believe so, right?
No, I haven't.
So the actor, I think it's Ken Strong, who played Kendall on the show, is like a method actor, like... Shatner-esque method actor, like, this is all I am and I'm nothing else, right? McConaughey. Don't address me as anything else but whatever my character. I'm Cooper during the filming of Interstellar and I'm nobody else. So Jim Carrey.
Rick
Rubin is the same. He's playing the part of Rick Rubin he invented.
Correct. He's exactly doing that. And if you look at Rick Rubin in the 80s, before he was the savant, he's a totally normal dude who is a little bit nerdy, a little bit geeky. I think the legitimate Richard Rubin has far more in common with you and me than he does the Rick Rubin producer savant.
That's a leecher.
And hopefully I mean that in a good way. So, Slayer, we are coming off the heels of South of Heaven, which... I know most people consider Rain and Blood to be the Slayer record, but I felt that South of Heaven was actually a level up from Rain and Blood. I actually enjoy Rain and Blood more than South of Heaven, but there is a lot of really cool stuff in the pupil stage on South of Heaven. Now we are getting to, what's after pupil stage? I don't know.
You do this one, and I'm not the right guy to ask. Larvae? Mm. I don't know.
No, larval is before pupil. Anyway, so the cocoon opens, whatever the gremlins are called after they get out of their cocoons. We're in that stage. I only can remember larval and pupil stage from literally the movie Gremlins, when Corey Feldman asks the science teacher, what's this called, the putrid stage? Pupil stage. Pupil stage, Corey. Anyway, that's how I remember that. And if they would have mentioned the next one, I probably would have been better. So Slayer walks out of South of Heaven. They go on tour, of course. They do all the good business. And they get back to writing. So on the writing of this record, again, we have Jeff Hanneman writing all but three songs to a point. Kerry King writes three and then has two co-writes with Jeff. So Jeff has written most of this record again. Lyrics, we have actually, and then King and Araya, Kerry and Tom write most of the lyrics. And in fact, my favorite song on this record, my two favorite songs on this record, were both written by Tom Araya. Tom Araya, not considered to be the main lyricist of Slayer, never really considered as a lyricist, quite frankly. So we have a sharing of the duties. We have a lifting of the load, a full-on Gunga Din line. If writing Slayer tunes put out fires by moving water buckets, they've done it. They've all done it. They've all put in there. That is the weirdest analogy I think I've ever made. I was talking about Gunga Din lines with buying a pizza oven today. So, I mean, I'm in a weird mood. Also should mention that Jane's Addiction, Richelieu de l'Habitual, came out this year as well. So great year of music. And out of all the records I mentioned earlier and all the bands I mentioned earlier, very few of them are as far beloved now as I think this record is. You know, we have Pantera, we have Anthrax, we have Living Color, we have Jane's Addiction. Of those bands, I think only the Jane's Addiction album is as well loved in the catalog as Seasons in the Abyss is for Slayer. Seasons in the Abyss is, I mean, I can remember in 1994 describing it as artistic Slayer, because they took a new tact. And full disclosure, before we get to the track by track, which we are coming up on, I did not listen to this full record today. In fact, I did not listen to Seasons in the Abyss, the title track. But my God, that song is emblazoned in my brain, because that song is amazing. I did a 1.5 mile walk on my lunch break today. So I was moving and grooving. Slayer helped me get through it. I mean, I was listening to this and just pounding. So Slayer is about to embark on one last tour, one last album, one last run. This is the end of classic Slayer. Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
I mean, I feel like they toured after this for like...
Right, they toured for like 2 or 3 years.
Because Lombardo's leaving is what you're alluding
to.
Yeah. But like, yeah, they did do Decade of Aggression. They did do a live concert with Dave.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we are looking at the last basically 2 years of Classic Slayer. Maybe even a little longer than that. Because Divine Intervention comes out around Labor Day of 94. And that was the first Slayer record I bought around or close to release point. But after this, regardless of how many reunions they have with Dave Lombardo, this is the top of the mountain for Classic Slayer. Everything is downhill from here. And I think we can all agree to that. Even, you know, Crazy Nick, who likes the weirdo albums from all his favorite bands. And with that, I am ready for track by track, unless you have anything to say.
I have a few quick notes to add. By the way, Anthrax's fifth record is, in fact, Persistence of Time, which is one of my favorites. Came out in 1990. I don't disagree with you about anything you said, basically. I agree with all the points. You are right. I think it's interesting to note that, again, this is the record that follows South of Heaven, which was divisive, and this was seen as a return to form, although, again, now, in hindsight, at the time, South of Heaven was split the fans, but we know it to be phenomenal. And then I'm going to say, like, we didn't talk about this, but their tour manager from back in Rain and Blood, Rick Sales, has become their manager. And this guides and shapes the band through to now. And he has also become the manager of Ghost. He's also the manager of several other bands. So just to keep in mind, you know, that guy has had a major league impact, and his decisions have no doubt made Slayer the household name they are, but also he has like a 90-10 split with the band on money, which, as we discussed last week, is the primary source of consternation of Lombardo and why he's in and out of the band and now out of the band forever. So, and with that...
Well, money is always the downfall of every relationship.
I agree.
Alrighty, I will continue leading this week. Let's, I'm gonna hit mush and kick the war horses in the junk. So let's get on into track number one, War Ensemble. This one is a statement. It is a statement song. This is, the thing about this song is it's 5 minutes long. And I mean, the idea of, at this point in time, the idea of a 5 minute Slayer song is like a 35 minute record for most people, like a 35 minute song. Because Slayer has been in, get in, hit it hard, get out. Just, you know, complete kamikaze, blitzkrieg, boom, done. And this song is great. It is a 10 of 10. And it's almost two songs that are the same song. Because once you get to the bridge, it feels like it's not the same song. And for Slayer, that is a huge leap forward. They did not make that leap forward on South of Heaven, though they were trying to.
Fair enough. This is one of the best album openers ever in thrash metal, let alone one of the best Slayer album openers, arguably their second best. It did become a staple of their live set, to the point where I think people were like, it was their opener for a long time. They used to close with it on occasion to change it up for themselves. You know, it's a pretty incredible song. And as you already alluded to early in the podcast, Jeff and Tom co-wrote more than half the album. King does make quite a few contributions musically and lyrically, but Jeff overwhelmingly dominates this album, and this song is proof.
And still no writing credits from Lombardo.
Not a single writing credit for the drummer ever.
Moving on into Blood Red. I think we can do Blood Red and Spirit and Black kind of together, quite honestly. I'm sorry, Blood Red and Spirit. Did I say Blood Red and Spirit? Blood Red and Spirited and Black. I apologize. My brain went foot. All of a sudden, everything tasted purple. So this is the soft underbelly of the record for me. Neither one of these songs are bad. They're both great. The problem is it's the same song twice in a row. I said it.
I hard disagree. There's no soft underbelly on this record. The first Slayer record with no soft underbelly.
You drop one of these and it's not for me. These two songs are too similar. Or, put Temptation where Spirit in Black is.
I don't cut either of these. I think Spirit in Black's a little more differentiated than you think. But to me, these are both great songs. Maybe they are both great songs. Spirit in Black is like a hair better than Blood Red, but not by much.
They are great songs. However, they should not be back-to-back. They should just... So, moving on into Expendable Youth, which is an outcropping of, in my humble opinion, Mandatory Suicide. So, what we have here is we have a Pink Floyd Obscured by Clouds, Dark Side of the Moon situation. A Pink Floyd Adam Hart Mother, Wish You Were Here situation. We have Adam Hart Mother Echoes. Or, not Echoes, Metal. Damn. Again, everything just started tasting purple. So we have a band who created a wonderful template and created a great record. And they thought to themselves, you know what? If we double down on this, 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 and this, we can make a super amazing record next time. And you know what? No complaints.
Yeah, I think trying to take a shot at the same kind of song again, fantastic song, all written by Carrie. Somebody had to play the drums on this, though. Like, again, no credits for Lombardo, but...
We haven't mentioned yet. His drumming on this album already at this point is super mega next level. And
yeah, like, I always, again, he Super Saiyans the drum performance every album.
Correct. I always liked the Bostoff records better, but now that I'm really going back and really paying attention to the drums, no, Lombardo is 10 times the drummer Bostoff ever was.
I mean, Paul is great. The recordings weren't doing Dave the justice. I will say also, Expendable Youth has one of the better key changes in Slayer history, where the chorus is actually kind of changes key, you know, chromatically changes key in a really cool way. Tom, phenomenal lyrics and vocal delivery on Expendable Youth also. Correct. No relation to Flaming Youth by Kiss, by the way.
That song sucks. Moving on to the best song on the record, in my humble opinion, and a re-recording and rewriting of the title track of South of Heaven, Dead Skin Mask. This song is perfection. They took what they learned what they did on that, the South of Heaven track, and leveled it up perfectly and amazingly, lyrically better, musically better. We got harmony solos, we've got drum interplay, we've got everything you need. This is progressive Slayer defined.
Yeah, really, no notes, man. This is an incredible track. It's the favorite track of many. Tom with the lyrics, Ed Gein is the subject, and of course Slayer writing songs about serial killers, no surprise.
And
just
also
an unbelievable record.
On this, and it continues on side two, we're about to flip the record for those of us like me who have this on vinyl. We are now at Ominous Slayer. Instead of it being evil, 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 creepy, 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 we have like, let's scare you. Let's move into this. And that's what makes this so much better. Next, move into more classic Slayer acreage with Hollowed Point. If you want some serious thrash metal, some serious, you know, angry stuff, not a bad track.
Sorry to correct you. It's Hallowed Point, not
Hallowed. Did I say Hallowed?
Well, whatever. I mean, it feels like it should be Hollow Point, like bullets, but it's Hallowed Point.
I think it's a pun. I think it's a pun.
It could be a pun. Lyrics by Tom and Jeff. Music by Jeff and Carrie. Fantastic song. Great. Peel the tuna can lid. Peel the pop the beer can open for side two. And just a classic thrashy Slayer song.
Yeah, ripping the Band-Aid off. Moving on into Skeletons of Society. Now, when I had mentioned the Ominous Slayer, here we go again. This is Slayer writing fiction. You know, they one who's maybe a bit cynical like myself, looking up at guys who are about 10 to 15 years older than me in Slayer, maybe they watched a lot of early 80s movies. Skeletons of Society is clearly an apocalyptic post-nuclear war kind of song, and it's amazing and wonderful and no notes.
Also no notes, Fragments of What Used to Be. Dude, like, Skeletons of Society is arguably my second favorite Slayer song. It's absolutely a banger. They got that mid-tempo groove downs. You know, like, obviously a lot of people, like Eddie Van Halen, a lot of people heard Dave Lombardo and mimicked what he did and learned how to do what he did, but they didn't do it just like him. And when you hear the restraint and the pocket and the groove of Lombardo to match the pocket of the killer riffing and vocal delivery of this song, chef's kiss, it is beautiful.
And that signature, that kind of breakdown. And this is like the first metal record we've talked about in terms of years that really busts out breakdowns. And now they're everywhere and you just can't get away from them. And I feel bad for the people when I hit the breakdowns that I saw on the trail today when I was walking and I started making like crazy faces and, you know, whatever. It's this song. It's all this song. Moving on into Temptation, frankly, not a song that leaves a mark.
I think it's solid. If there's a soft underbelly, it's this song, not the other two that are
to perfect. Quote you, it's solid if not spectacular.
Well, no, this is not even if spectacular. It's just solid. I think it's just
Sorry, solid though unspectacular.
Not surprisingly, these two songs are the king lyrics and music. I wouldn't kick it off the album because, again, to me, this is a great album of tracking is perfect, honestly.
The only thing about this one is it's a little bit longer. It's 42 minutes as opposed to 30 to 36. If you drop Born of Fire, move Spirit in Black where Temptation. Take Temptation off, move Spirit of Black there, and I think we've got a much better record. But it's not bad to begin with. I mean, we're talking about we'd go from like 9.9 out of 10 to 10 out of 10. The difference is very, very minuscule.
Fair enough. I wouldn't change anything about this record. But anyway, continue. That's fair.
Moving on into Born of Fire, a song I mentioned moments ago mistakenly. Another great song, another kind of, you know, post-apocalyptic stuff. Slayer is, for the first and last time, we have Slayer discussing possible futures. And it's cool, and it goes away. Good song. Would not kick it off the record.
Yeah, they love their post-apocalyptic war songs.
And, Mad Max for the win, bro.
They envision a future that is much more bleak than I do. And it's fantastic. Again, Kerry King, three songs in a row on the lyrics for Kerry on side two, which is maybe, to me, side two sounds a little samey compared to side one. That's my ears, not yours. But I think that may be why.
That's fair. Let's move on into the greatest song on this record. Not my favorite, but it is the best. And this, of course, is the title track, Seasons in the Abyss. Once again, Slayer tried something they did earlier that did not work. They put the title track as the last song. They put the title track as the longest song. It did not work for Show No Mercy. It works here. On top of that, the video for this is amazing. I don't know if the video has anything really to do with the song itself. It was filmed in front of and in the pyramids. And that is 100% completely illegal. And it is against all Egyptian law. So how did Slayer get away with it, you ask? Because, you know, they do have guards in front of these wonderful UNESCO heritage sites. They bribed them with two cartons of American cigarettes and two porno magazines. Presumably, knowing those guys, probably Hustler. So, I mean, I imagine like some kind of some Egyptian in 1990 going, whoa, this is something.
Future us, please ask DX Ferris what porno mags of choice Slayer probably had.
Oh my God, I don't want to know.
I do. Biggins. Anyway.
Whoa.
When I scored four touchdowns that day for Polk High School, Peg, Seasons in the Abyss is one of the absolute greatest songs of the metal genre, period, full stop, no exaggeration.
Correct.
It's incredible in every way. Music by Jeff, once again, why is it not even a surprise? Lyrics by Tom, again, surprise, like phenomenal, phenomenal lyricism on this record by Tom, either both in collaboration or the handful of songs. And it's long, but it doesn't feel long. It's got that very eerie folk, a thing correct that would be borrowed for like almost a madrigal in classical music, like a little canon, you know, type of chamber music, eerie part, mysterious.
It's got dynamics. It's got solos. It's got metal. It's got soul. It's got heart. I mean, it is this in terms of songwriting, just pure songwriting. This is the best Slayer ever does.
And maybe the best drum fill of any Slayer song that is not Angel of Death. That, like, before the heavy part comes in, that just falling down the stairs Lombardo drum fill is just brain-breaking every time I hear it.
Completely with you on that. So here we have this record. We've gone through the whole thing. Is it a 10 of 10? No. Is it like 9.98 or 9.99, definitely. It's an amazing record. It is one of the absolute standouts of the genre. And this is, in my opinion, the absolute zenith of the original Slayer lineup. I like some of the things they did later, slightly better, perhaps. I say that now, before we have revisited. Although I don't know how far we're going. We're definitely not doing Undisputed Attitude because I don't want to listen to that piece of crap ever again. But I absolutely love this record. The bass player in my old band, Tim Rich, bought this for me on CD when in 1994 for Christmas. He got it for $5 at Record Exchange. Still have that CD somewhere, even though I've got it on vinyl. When I sold off a bunch of CDs, I did not sell it, and it says Deaf American Recordings on it. So that is all I have to say. I will let you take us home.
Very nice, very nice. I am going to just finally say that, yeah, this, I don't want to, we're going to do our tier rankings at the end of the series, but honestly, of this trilogy of the most important three Slayer records, I love South of Heaven. So it's not a question of which one is the better or the best. I think still Rain and Blood is the best. But this is slightly deeper and more just better sounding, better music than South of Heaven. South of Heaven to me has the soft underbelly that's undeniable. And I think my personal feelings is there's one song maybe I would get rid of, or just like I wouldn't get rid of it. I just think it's just a little bit lower quality than the other nine. And, you know, this record is a testament to the band, no pun intended there either. Just how they were advancing. Every record is different. They never make the same record twice. They make songs that call back to the, oh, that's kind of like that song. And that's kind of like a new, my co-host here likes to say, a better version of an updated version.
At this point, they don't make the same record twice.
No, they definitely don't. And it's a shame that Dave leaves, because like I would love to have heard what the record it's not a question of saying like Dave, if you replace Dave on Divine, replace Paul with Dave, it's the same record. It wouldn't be. Maybe they would have wrote differently. Maybe Dave's playing in the writing stage shapes and moves the songs in different places, because that's the kind of brain he has.
We're gonna do Divine Intervention next week, and I don't know if we're doing Diabolus after that. I will say this much about Divine Intervention: as much as I love it, as great of a record as it is, it's a little awkward.
It was bound to be, and then it has to also do with 1994 and music and all kinds of things we'll get into next episode when we unpack this stuff. But what a fantastic record, and if that is all there is today, I will say you have been listening to the Glacially Musical Podcast. I am Ghost Cult Keefe of GhostCultMag.com. Follow me at Ghost Cult Keefe, at Ghost Cult Mag on all the socials, especially Instagram and YouTube. We're at Ghost Cult Mag, where all my band interviews are. Also, you know your host here is Nick_no_C on a few socials, mostly glacially_musical on most others. I've been trying to reply to Nick on things like Threads and Blue Sky a little more, because fuck Twitter and X and whatever the fuck kind of.
I would love to get a huge following on those platforms so I can give up X.
A lot of people seem to be going away from it. I'm not sure why. It was my favorite for the longest time. But that being said, you have been listening to the Glacially Musical Podcast. It does not play in Peoria, and Dave Lombardo certainly would never play Peoria with Slayer ever again after 1991.
Pour one out.